Hello and welcome to this week's Nona Never podcast, where, ladies and gentlemen, we're all going on a European tour. I'm your host, Natalie Bromley, and joining me this week, as ever, is regular panellist and co-editor James Bird. Good evening, James.
Good evening.
Well, all we have to talk about this week is a small matter of another Clarets victory. That's four back-to-back victories in the Premier League and another away win as well. The Clarets notching up their seventh away win this season, which is pretty impressive considering the well-documented troubles that the Clarets had away from Turf Moor this season. So we're going to have a look at the game. We're going to dissect what went right. We're going to look at a very crazy three-minute spell that turned the game around. And we're going to start looking forward to some possibly huge news for next season. So, James, let's jump straight into it. So the Clarets 2-1 winners away from home at Watford, Sean Dyche's old hunting ground, I guess, where he used to work. His first major managerial post down at Watford before he was quite harshly sacked in his first season in charge. When the club sold it to the Italians, wasn't it? I think that's what happened. And I think at the time, Watford fans were pretty unhappy about his dismissal. I think I read earlier on that he guided Watford up to their highest position in the Championship for quite some time, and they were well on course for promotion. So their loss is most definitely our gain, and we have inherited him, and he went down there and proved a point. Unfortunately, the Clarets did go 1-0 behind, and at the time, not the best of performances, but they managed to turn it around with two fantastic goals in 3 minutes to take the lead and hold on to it. But James, let's start at the very beginning and let's have a look, as we usually tend to do, at the teams. So the main two things to look out for, first and foremost, were Kevin Long coming in for Ben Mee, who had suffered an injury prior to the game and missed out. What did you think of his performance, James? I think he seems to be settling in all right now. I don't think he's doing that badly at all. What did you think?
I thought he was pretty solid. I'm quite a... trying to think what the right word is. I was about to say fan, and then I realised fan's not the right word. Admirer, I think maybe is better, of Kevin Long's ability to spend long spells out of the team and then come in and do a job. I think it's probably a really tough role to play when a team's as settled as Burnley are under Sean Dyche. But, you know, he's been at the club a long time. He knows the system inside out. And I think now he's gaining the confidence that when he's called upon, he knows he's able to do the job that's necessary. And obviously, Ben Mee's a big miss, so it's massive shoes for him to fill. And I think he did an admirable job.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. And I think it's really important to highlight his ability when he does come in from a long spell on the sidelines, because he has had a very hit and miss season. Well, he has his entire Burnley career, hasn't he? But, you know, we hear Dyche talk about that all the time. We talk about the resilience of these players and their patience and just how hard they work on the training pitch. So to see it manifest itself so obviously in Kevin Long when he comes onto the pitch is really reassuring to see. Can we just have a quick, I guess, interjection at this point, James? And can we have a quick talk about the Burnley situation when it comes to injuries? And in particular, Sean Dyche's very, very vague announcement of them. There seems to be a trend with Sean Dyche when he announces that players have got a little niggle or they've got a tweak here or there, and it's just a small knock, and, you know, he's just going to be out for a short while. And then they just seem to inevitably turn into 3-month layoffs. Goodmunson out again with a niggle as well, as was Ben Mee. And I was really worried when Sean Dyche says, oh, he's out short term, he's just a niggle or something, because it ends up being a disastrously long time. I think most of us have got our suspicions as to why Dyche does this, but why do you think he massively underplays injuries, James? What's going on there?
I think it's just a trend in modern sport, to be honest. A lot of coaches, a lot of managers, they don't like to reveal too much to the opposition that they might be able to make use of. And it's just the way it goes. I think as well, with all the sort of modern techniques that they have now for trying to help rehabilitate injuries, it's not always easy to give a proper time scale, because obviously different people react to things different ways, and there's lots of different options they've got to try and speed the recovery up. So I think where previously maybe you knew that an injury took 2 months because you just basically didn't risk it, you waited until it was 100% and then they came back, whereas now maybe there's other methods you can use that can perhaps help it, you know, going into sort of those ice chambers they've had previously, or, you know, hydrotherapy and all these other things that people have been working on in more recent years. And as a result, maybe that takes something that previously would have been a guaranteed 2 months. Maybe it's now, you know, 3 weeks to 2 months, depending on how the player can react to the extra treatment you can give them. And I think that's sort of probably a good bit of the driver behind why injury reporting just in general, I think, is so vague.
Yeah, that's a really good point, actually. I don't think I'd really thought of it that way, in that it may very well be a, like you say, just that Dyche doesn't know and he is just trying to not panic people. And I guess, I suppose as well, there's a psychological thing there, is if, you know, it's well documented how thin our squad is compared to other Premier League sides. In fact, compared to a lot of football teams, actually, there's Championship sides that have got a much stronger, but it's certainly in terms of numbers, a greater depth to the squad than we do. So I suppose if he goes out there and says, you know, that a key player is going to be out for, you know, 3 months or whatever, then it does give a psychological boost to our competitors around us in the table, I guess, doesn't it? So the other, again, substitution, we had Gudmundsson didn't make it, but again, Hendrick found himself on the bench, James, and didn't make the first team again, which I think some people have been calling out for, and Georgian Kudu started again. Now, I was going to talk about this, I think, a little bit later on when we looked at his substitution, because obviously that was a key moment in the game, but I'm going to bring it forward now while we're talking about injuries and players coming in and out of the team and things like that now. Quite a bit of criticism from Burnley fans on George's performance, James. I mean, how do we feel here? I think a lot of Burnley fans are suggesting that this is going to be a short loan spell and he's going to end up being sent back at the end of the season with no chance of a possible sale. But actually, I've seen quite a lot on Spurs forums today that are suggesting that his Spurs career is all but over now after his failure to impress us in our team, and just his performance levels haven't been what they expected that they would be. I've seen sparks in him. I've seen play that I'm excited about, and I've seen runs that I'm excited about, but I think it is probably fair to say that his overall impression hasn't been that convincing, has it?
I think it's difficult. You know, like you say, we've seen glimpses. There's been a game or two where he's looked interesting, he's looked sharp, but to be honest, we've not really seen a huge amount of him. I think it's very harsh to maybe draw too many conclusions on what he is, what he isn't. He's not played a huge amount of games in the Premier League at all. You know, we've seen with other players, Hendrick, Brady, I think to an extent, it's taken them a while to warm into the side and for us to see the benefits of what they can do. And obviously in the case of Hendrick, we've seen this season that maybe he's not reached some of the level that he did show at times last season. And it just shows, I think, how hard it is in the Premier League to get yourself to a level that impresses people. Also, I think maybe a little bit of it is probably expectation as well at Burnley now. Expectations have sort of skyrocketed the way we've been playing this season. And, you know, you look at the other options we've got in this the side. Robbie Brady, obviously, early in the season was looking really strong, really good. We've had Aaron Lennon come in, and as soon as he switched to the right-hand side, since then he's looked sensational. Gudmundsson, who now that he's managed to put his injury troubles the last season behind, has looked like a hell of a package for a mid-table, top-half Premier League side like us. So it's one of those ones I find it really hard to judge. And I think, to be honest, he'll never get a real chance at Spurs. Spurs are too big a side for a player like him to be sort of brought through. I don't think he's come in with the pedigree necessary to sort of get that impact in their side and get a real run of games in order to get it under the experience under his belt that he maybe needs to perform at the level he maybe has the potential for.
Yeah, it's a tough one, isn't it? I mean, We saw it ourselves when we benefited from Ben Mee and Kieran Trippier, who were coming through strongly in the Manchester City ranks, and they were struggling, and they knew that they were never going to get an extended run in that Manchester City side. And it's similar now for teams like Spurs. They're looking for world-class players, and you know, these teams don't necessarily give their young kids or the younger players a chance to develop and work their way into the side. That just doesn't happen in the bigger sides anymore. I think I agree with you all of that, James. I don't think I'm necessarily looking for us to keep him at the end of the season. That said, if we are going on this European tour that we're all singing about, then we are going to need to increase the playing staff quite significantly. So you never know. Dyche might see something in him that he can work with for a full pre-season and you know, build him into the ethos of the club and build that team spirit around him. And if he thinks he's useful, we might end up getting him as a squad player with a view to covering. So who knows? To turn into the game itself, James, Clarence got off to an absolutely fantastic start with a very early goal, which unfortunately was ruled for offside. Chris Wood scoring in the first minute of the game, actually. It was a correct offside decision. There was actually three of them offside at the time. But then after that, there really wasn't anything else. I think a particularly quiet first half from the Clarets. One thing, I remember there was a really good chance from Lennon, I think, where he put in an absolutely fantastic cross. Again, he is turning into just a fantastic player for us. And Ashley Barnes just tripped over his feet and just fell on the floor and didn't get a chance to connect to it. But other than that, it was a pretty quiet first half. I guess the only real thing to talk about from that first 45 minutes, James, was just another incredible performance from Nick Pope. Really, the only reason why we went into that half-time talk at 0-0 was two in particular, a fantastic saves from him. Now, this is on a day where Tom Heaton finds himself back on the bench for Burnley and absolutely desperate to get back into contention and to be picked for that side. How we've talked about this a few times, but obviously that's not going to have done Heaton's heart rate any good, is it, James? I mean, how on earth do you now bring Tom Heaton into this side and drop Nick Pope?
I think it's going to be very difficult. You know, I've seen a lot of talk about this from Burnley fans. What do you do with the Nick Pope, Tom Heaton problem? You know, does one have to leave in the summer? And I've seen lots of people say if they die, it'll be Heaton who goes in the summer. Personally, I think that if one of them's likely to go, it's probably actually likely to be Pope because he's young, he's got that value. Whereas I think if you sell Tom now and Pope keeps getting better in 2 years, we found we have to get two completely brand new keepers rather than just replacing the one. But it's going to be interesting to see what happens because I don't think Tom can get back in realistically until Pope's either injured or makes quite a big mistake because he's built up quite a bit of credit now for making a mistake because he's just been so good. And I can't think of any goal this season that I could honestly say is to blame for, to be honest, either. You know, there's still weaknesses in his game, for sure. I think his distribution probably needs to get better, and I think that's what's kept him out of the England side, to be honest. Most games, it's serviceable, but there's been a couple of games, particularly I think around Christmas, where his kicking was just so wayward that you know, that's not the type of distribution that will get you in an England side or get you a position at one of the top teams at the moment. Because you know, we see the trend now is to have a keeper who can distribute the ball well and can play almost as well as an outfield player with it at his feet.
Oh God, that's really tough, isn't it? How do you? I think I probably agree with you, to be honest. Oh, do I? For me, I think it comes down to which one of them I would rather have. And I never ever thought I'd say this, but if you're right, James, and somebody said, like, you can only keep one of them in the summer because neither one of them is going to stay on a bench for the summer, for a season. They're just not going to tolerate that. I think I'd prefer to keep Pope than Heaton, which is quite a surprise. I think he's just... I agree with everything that you say, James. I don't need to repeat it. So I don't know. How can we even be sat here contemplating at the end of this season that we might be losing Tom Heaton and they might go somewhere else? After his injury so early on in the season, we thought we were done. We thought we were going to really struggle. And I tell you, actually, that's quite an interesting time in the podcast to say this. We were talking on the way home at the weekend about just this crazy season we're having and the chances that we're creating and the opportunities that we're giving for ourselves. And if you'd have said to us at the beginning of the season that we would have to play this entire season without Tom Heaton, Michael Keane and Andre Gray as well, what would you, and then Robbie Brady being out as well through a long-term injury, what, I think we'd have all thought we were crazy to think we'd even survive in this league, never mind start pushing for a European place. So, well, anyway, we all know how that goes. It's been a fantastic season. So I guess the only other thing to think about in the first half, James, do we think we can afford to maybe be a bit braver away from home? I know Dyche likes to keep it pretty tight and keep it at 0-0. That seems to be his blueprint, but we're pushing now for a European place and we've achieved more than we ever can. And we're actually looking like we're going to go past 50 points this season. So would you like to see us go for it a bit more?
It's difficult. I think we've shown signs of improving in this aspect, all season. That's shown by the results we've had. But we've been saying for a little while now, what's really been missing from our game is more goals. We've seen a few more in recent weeks. And I think the Barnes-Wood partnership looks really promising for that. But I think we do need to get a little bit of consistency in how aggressive we're looking to be. We seem to just go through spells where we maybe not pushing on as much to get in the final third as we'd like to be. But I think on the whole, if you look at where we were maybe a couple of months ago with regards to scoring goals and creating chances, we've come on leaps and bounds already. And I think a big part of that has been adding Aaron Lennon to the side. I think he's been really good. I've been really impressed with him since he moved to the right-hand side. And, you know, he's just the standard of player, I think, going back to all these things that you never thought you'd see Burnley be or get. I think, you know, having a name like Lennon in the starting 11 every week is another one of those that you can add to the list, along with, you know, having a player of the calibre of Defoe, obviously out injured at the moment. But we've been making quite a few strides towards stuff you thought you'd never see, and obviously potentially Europe now next season as well. So it's a bit strange to sort of be sat here wondering whether we could be doing more when we've come so far already. But I think home and away, a little bit more aggression would probably be a good thing for us.
Yeah, I agree with that. So let's move forward then, and we start looking into the second half. Now, we were, at the time the Watford goal went in, I think on the back foot. I think that's probably fair to say. I don't think the Clouts were performing particularly very well. And at the time that the Watford goal went in, they were looking like far superior the side. They had the lion's share of the possession. They were creating chances and they were playing a lot more positively. And it was kind of like a sinking feeling, I think, when that goal went in, because we felt that we may struggle then to get back into the game. Now, the goal itself, James, I thought was pretty unlucky, really. I think Ward makes an absolutely fantastic tackle, but it just falls so unlucky that it just literally just goes straight to his feet in a really nice position. I guess, do you see anything in defence that we could have maybe done a little bit differently, or is it just a really unlucky goal in the end, do you think?
I think there's an element of being unlucky in most goals like that. It's difficult. You know, obviously, there's sometimes stuff that maybe could have gone better. You know, could you stop Watford getting into the position in the first place? I don't know. I think with some, you are just probably picking at it too much to find a real fault. And, you know, at the time, Watford were in the ascendancy and they deserved it. It was a goal that was coming. But I think it acted as the wake-up call necessary. And, you know, that, along with the substitution, really turned the game around for us.
Yeah, it really did. It was a very quick reaction, wasn't it, from Dyche? I think, obviously, in the space of 3 minutes, everything just went completely crazy. I think it went from a 0-0 game to 2-1. So let's have a look then at the substitution. Dyche doing quite an unusual thing for him and just going for it and put all three strikers on. So we had Wood, Barnes and Vaux on front. I think, as we mentioned earlier on, and Kudu was the one who had to make way for him, and he went with three up front. That's an excellent statement from Dyche, isn't it, James? I mean, that was definitely a statement of intent to go ahead and win the game.
Yeah, and it's actually interesting to see a sub be the thing that makes the impact for us, because I saw a chart of average substitutions for Premier League sides. yesterday, I think it was. And we're second bottom, unsurprisingly, making the second least average number of substitutions a game at 2.1, with only Crystal Palace making less. And actually, just to go on a tangent a little bit, what I found really interesting was that was the article was trying to say that actually making so few subs was something that worked against Crystal Palace, which when just looking at the table, seeing them obviously with the least and us with the second least, I was thinking, well, there's quite a contrast there because, you know, Crystal Palace are probably a team that were expected to finish mid to bottom half, probably not as low as they are. And we were probably expected to finish bottom half to relegated. And they're drawing a conclusion there that making so few subs has really worked against Crystal Palace. But yet we've made so few subs and we're doing really well this season, probably, you know, far outstripping expectation. But I think Dash is showing now he's maybe more willing to make a sub at times, and I think, you know, on Saturday he's timed it to perfection there. He's made the right sub at the right time, and it's really, you know, turned the game around for us. And three strikers, that's almost feels alien to have a Sean Dyche side have three strikers at the same time, because he's previously been, you know, maybe thought of as defensive and cautious, but I think there he's showing that, you know, he wants to go and win games, even though now, really, and this is something that I keep seeing people complain about where we are in Match of the Day, but Burnley's games to the anyone other than a Burnley fan don't really mean a lot now, I don't think. You know, so when we're on Match of the Day and we're, you know, in the tail half of the programme, it's because we're not really battling for anything. And a lot of the teams we've been playing aren't really battling for anything. You know, West Brom last week, they're done. They're going down. Watford, you know, they're going to be mid-table like we are. So to the neutral, there's not really anything to watch there. But to see us still going to win these games now, even though, you know, the main objective of our season, I guess, is done. And, you know, there's still a glimmer of sixth there. And I think if Arsenal stop getting a little bit fortunate, we might have a chance of getting it.
Arsenal getting fortunate, like James? What in the world are you talking about?
I don't know. Who ever thought that happened? But for the most part, our season's pretty much sealed. You know, we're going to be 6th, 7th or 8th, most likely 7th.
Yeah.
Particularly if, obviously, something we're going to talk about a bit later, we can get a win on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, I think the most important thing that you said in that sentence there was to talk about the actual glass half full attitude towards Burnley not being reported. And I know Burnley, we see it week in after week, and it irritates me just as much. Burnley always last on Match of the Day, and you know, you get 2 minutes saying, oh, the thing, you know, Burnley have done great, haven't they? And then it's all analysis about somebody else. But Burnley fans, that's a good thing. Listeners, you know, see that as a positive. Then, you know, Sky Sports have got and all the other media and journalism across the globe these days have got an absolutely daily battle to keep headlines refreshed, to put content out there that will make people click on them, that will make people pay the subscription fees and keep people interested. There is not a story there with Burnley Football Club who are having the best season that they've ever had, which has been talked about since we went fourth in November. And they aren't going down. They're probably not going to get, you know, we might get a bit of enthusiasm if it goes to a top six space. But as it stands at the moment, it's just mid-table mediocrity. And they've said everything that they can say about Burnley's fantastic season, about Sean Dyche, about Ashley Barnes. It's all been said. It's not news and it needs refreshing. So that's a really good thing. You know, the fact that there's bigger teams in there that are having the news, the fact that the three relegated sides, sorry, may very well be West Brom, Stoke and Southampton, that's your headlines. You know, it, to an extent as well, look at it from the other scale, there's not a massive amount being said about Man City at the moment, because what else can you say about that City side, apart from that probably the greatest Premier League side that's ever been put out there now? Pep's probably having the best season as a manager that anybody's ever had. Well, that's, again, it's boring. Nobody wants to hear it anymore. So listeners, take James's words very, very, very carefully to heart there and see it as a very positive thing and a nice relief thing that we aren't being talked about. So let's look at the goal then, James. And my man, Sam Vokes, comes on, 24 seconds, first touch in the back of the net. Now, two things from this that I want to take, and I want you to dissect both of them for me, James. Number one, just the, I guess, sharpness of Sam Vaux. I think we got very lucky, let's be honest, in that the defender makes a pretty critical error, and he almost looks like he's trying to head it back to his keeper from that position. I know he's not, but it's a really poor defensive header. But just the Sam's, if you watch the footage, he never takes his eye off that ball, and he follows it and follows it and follow it, and he puts himself in that position where it's just a tap in. When you turn round and half of the Watford defenders are like sort of half-heartedly putting their arms in the air, asking for an offside. Nobody's watching him. Nobody knows what they're doing, but he was alive to it. So that's number one. And again, as you were saying before, that sharpness from a player who hasn't been playing much this season. And number two, Ashley Westwood. That free kick was absolutely fantastic, to the point where I thought it was either Lennon or Cork at first. I had no idea that it was Westwood until I watched it again. He was the one who put it in the back of the net. That is an absolutely fantastic free kick. It just puts it right where he wants it to be. And I don't think that's something necessarily that we expected from Westwood. So, James, dissect both of those for us for that goal.
Yeah, it's interesting you bring up Westwood there, because I think Westwood's been really impressive since he came to the side. You know, he's not quite Stephen Defoe, but he's been better than I think a lot of people expected.
Yeah. Can I just clarify that point, actually? I do completely agree with you there. Ashley West was one of my favourite players at the moment. I guess what I was getting at more was his spot kick, his set piece ability as opposed to his general play.
Yeah, no. And I think he got a fair amount of unfair stick in a few appearances last season, but he's shown when he's had to come in this season that he's more than adequate player for the Premier League. And you know, I think we've got a lot of good passes now in the middle, and just seeing that free kick, I think, sort of reinforces that there's a lot of good passes on the side. Probably I'd say, if you're looking at teams that don't have big names in, maybe one of the best passing sides in the league. And I think that's shown in when we come, you know, get people saying, oh, we're long ball. I think what we actually have is a lot of players who can mix up what they're doing with the ball, you know, short passes, long passes. And it's good to see. It's a great free kick. For me, I just can't understand how the Watford defence let Vaux get so free. You know, he really couldn't have asked for more time to tap that in. I think it's a classic Vaux goal, a real striker's goal, a real poacher's goal, as they say. And obviously, it came at a key moment so soon after the sub. It just gives everyone a bit of a lift and a lot of confidence, I think. And that's probably what enabled us to push on.
Yeah, it really did. And obviously you could sense the relief, I think, when the goal went in, couldn't you? You knew that this team had managed to get a goal back so quickly. You could see how much it meant to them. But before they'd really had a chance to settle on that first goal, we were at it again. And again, it was another goal from a set piece. But this time, I think Ashley showed us what he does best, and he proved himself to be a real nuisance. I mean, he got a bit of a clobber for that free kick that won it just outside the box. But he, you know, he does that. He gets us free kicks, he breaks down play, and he does that sort of thing. Westwood again with an absolutely fantastic cross into the box. Now this time it was a Cork goal, and he was the one who got it over the line. Now this one had a little bit more to talk about, James, didn't it? Because we had, first and foremost, we had a ball that was slightly over, sent a bit too long. So I think it was Wood couldn't quite get his head on it. But Kevin Long, out of absolutely nowhere, again was watching this ball, slotted himself behind Chris Wood and headed it back into the area, which allowed Cork to get onto it and try and get it over the line, which again, for a centre-half and a player who hasn't quite had an extended run in the side, was just showed unbelievable sharpness. And then we had the yay, no, oh, what's going on? Hey, we had the goal line technology. That was my commentating sound effects. Do you think Papa Bird would be very happy with that, James? I'm not sure he would he?
No, I think that'd be one of the times that if you were co-commentating, the mic would be unplugged.
I try. Sorry, Papa Bird. I'm just purely a disappointment. But yeah, no, we joke aside, but it was the goal line technology, which for once came in our favour, and very quickly, I have to say, got a message to the referee to let them know that the ball had crossed the line by quite some distance when you do watch it. So, James, again, I guess we can't really say an awful lot that we haven't already been said, but once again, fantastic sharpness from a player who hasn't played regularly, and another goal for our man, Jack Cork, who managed to get it over the line.
Yeah, no, it's great. Like you said, great from long to nod it back in. Those are the ones that quite often you see just, you know, fade out of play when they look like they've been overhit a little bit. But he gets it back into the danger zone. Cook gets his head on it. And ultimately, I think from that position, it, 9 times out of 10, the player heading the ball, he manages to score. You know, the keeper's made a great effort, but I think ultimately sort of the distance he had to move his arm and the distance the ball had to travel against him, and he was always going to be up against it to keep that out.
Yeah, still, we did really well, though. I think one of the things I was impressed with that goal was that the team's ability to make a nuisance of themselves in the box, but without putting themselves in any danger of conceding a free kick or losing the opportunity. There was a real physical presence in that box for that second goal. And I think the Watford defence didn't really know how to handle it. It seemed that everywhere they looked, there were just players all over the place in fantastically good positions. So that leaves us then, James, at the end of the game. Oh, actually, before we start this is something that I always want to ask here and I always seem to forget. So let's do this before I forget, because I quite like this to be a regular thing. Who was your man of the match?
It's not always easy to answer those sort of questions.
Not from Burnley side, is it? Sorry, I've put James on the spot here because I didn't actually tell him I was going to do this. So where we would normally think about these things in advance, this is none and ever chaos at its finest.
I think it was a great team performance. You know, it's too hard for me to pick, to be honest. I'm going to actually say Sam Vokes just for
that's
the
a good
impact.
Shout, actually.
You know, that's get a distinguishing factor. He's come on, he's had a massive impact. I think he's helped the team get it over the line. Yeah. And you know, maybe if he'd not made that change, we'd have struggled to get the result we did.
Yeah, I'm perfectly happy with that. I'm going to stick with Westwood, I think. I think that he's going to be my man of the match. I think he had a really solid performance and he had a hand in both goals. So I think that's... we've talked about this, haven't we, James, week in, week out on the podcast. I've just been so impressed when he came in. And I'd really like to see him keep his place in the side. I'm not really sure at whose expense or what future this means for Hendrick or Dean Marnie as well, we have to look at. But I just think it's fantastic. I think, oh God, it's Defoe as well when he comes in. Oh my gosh, James, we've got options. We've got selection headaches. What on earth is going on? So let's leave the Leicester game there we won't leave the Leicester game there, listeners. We'll leave the Watford game there. Let's look at what this means. And I think the reason why I tripped over with the Leicester word then is because not only did the Clarets manage to win and pick up another 3 points, but Leicester actually lost, which meant that we extended our lead over 8th place to 6 points with, of course, that key game coming up on the weekend. James, Europe. Now, I'm excited about Europe and I've been saying this all season, but I want to talk about Mr. Dyche. And I've said this on the podcast before and I've talked about his lack of enthusiasm maybe for a European adventure. And we've talked at length about his reasons why, and they're very valid reasons, so we're not going to repeat them. But there was a particular comment in the press that he made this week after the Watford game that has just irritated me slightly. So this may be irrational, listeners, so I'm going to see what James thinks and see if he can dissect this for us. But he was questioned about Europe and he said, the question to him was, how disappointed are the Burnley fans going to be if you miss out on Europe this year? And he was saying, no, Burnley fans won't care at all. They're getting way more than they expected. They wanted Premier League football, so anything on top of that's a bonus, and a bonus to an extent I agree with. But he then said, the fans know that we're not the real deal, but they do enjoy it when the team is delivering performances like it is. Now, Sean, no. I'm going to disagree with that. As a fan, and as one of the fans that you're talking about there, I don't turn around to anybody and say, we're not the real deal. James, it's Dyche's absolute speciality to play down the team and to keep us as the underdogs and to not let people get carried away and to not let expectation levels run away with us so that you then start underperforming and not overperforming. But at what point does that sentence become a little bit farcical? They know we're not the real deal. We've been sat in seventh for what feels like forever. We've won 7 games away from home against some really tricky opponents. We've weathered an 11-game unbeaten, unwinning run. We got up to fourth at one point. Why are we the real deal? What's the definition of real deal?
I think it's difficult. I think he's maybe not picked the best words there. It's hard to try and give an opinion, because I think really what he's maybe trying to say is that, you know, the fans realise that this is one season. You know, we've seen before Leicester had one amazing season and that they won the league. And, you know, while they've not been an awful Premier League team pretty much since, they've gone back to being sort of unspectacular, middle of the pack. And I think he's trying to maybe just temper expectations a little bit, that, you know, Burnley can maintain this level, because maybe we can't. It's going to be difficult. You know, we're going to have to make a few tweaks to the side. Teams are going to start getting wise to what we can do. We're going to have to start looking to play other ways. We've seen that actually within this season. You know, the way we struggled maybe to get a win over that Christmas period, and we were picking up a lot of draws, obviously not getting beat a lot. We're still tough to score against, but teams were finding ways to nullify our threats. So I think maybe what Dash is trying to say is that, you know, there's more to come, there's more to be added to make us a team that could handle, you know, the workload of being involved in so many competitions.
Yeah, I get all of that, and I understand that that's what he's doing, but I just, maybe you're right, maybe it's just the choice of terminology, but I just, that sentence to me, he makes very few mistakes, does Dash, in the media. I think his savviness in front of the press is absolutely outstanding, but I think that to me was a slight lack of judgment, I think, and I got a sense of scoffing a little bit from, I think it was a Telegraph reporter who reported on it and sort of made a comment after it saying, like, it was almost like, yeah, I really don't believe that, you know. It was almost like he'd been found out for just trying to play it down, but it's just, I don't want us to get carried away. And, to me, it doesn't really matter whether we can sustain this run. The idea of being the real deal is in the moment. And to be honest, football's a very unique business model in that your business plan runs 12 months at a time and you're judged off one season. You're not judged on where you're going to be in 3 years, because everybody knows that, that football is a very high turnaround business and it's a roller coaster. So it's almost irrelevant. And I think clubs are naive, clubs shouldn't really focus too much on what's going to happen in 3 years' time. They've got to look at it now. So in that sense, I think we can say we're the real deal. We're the real deal this season. Now, we might not be next season, but, you know, look at the top of the Premier League. Chelsea last season won the Premier League and were absolutely sublime. And Conte was hailed as one of the greatest managers ever. 12 months on, they've had an absolutely shocking season. Conte's probably going to lose his job at the end of the season. And City have taken their place. So what do we say? That Chelsea aren't the real deal? You know, I just think it was an error in judgment from Dyche from that. But let's not get too carried away, because Dyche, you know what? We are going to get carried away about European football. It's my turn to host this week, and I'm the one who has been championing Europe for us for weeks and weeks and weeks. I'm going to carry on. James, we're going to finish seventh, aren't we? We're going to get into Europe.
I think we're going to comfortably finish seventh, obviously barring a miracle with Southampton. We'll be in Europe. It's good for the fans, but whether it's good for the team, I think that's to be seen.
What do you mean by that, James? Explain.
I think I've talked about it several times now, to be honest. It's, to me, I think, you know, those extra games that are going to take us away from our focus could be difficult for us. You know, as we've said before, we're not a deep squad. It's going to be a lot of work to cope with for the players. It's going to be a high workload. It's going to be a distraction, I think, from what we maybe perhaps need to focus on. And, you know, we've seen teams in the past who've done well in competitions at the detriment to the big one, the league. And I think we've obviously got to try and avoid the trap of being another one of those teams that, while they focus on something else, don't do as well as they could do in the league.
Yeah, but if we look on the flip side, though, James, is this not a side that can cope with that? If there's one side that can deal with the extra pressure, then surely it's this hard-working Burnley side. I mean, Dyche tells us all the time that he doesn't bother about extra games, that they thrive off extra games. And there's not that many at the beginning of the season. And if he just builds his pre-season friendlies around Europe with a view to, well, if we get knocked out, it doesn't really matter, But surely it's still got to be something to get excited about. I feel like we're on the verge of achieving something absolutely spectacular, but everybody's putting a real dampener on it, and that's really upsetting me a bit this season.
I'd say I think it's exciting for the fans, but there is a risk that it can have an undesirable impact on the team, and I think it would be great for the fans. There's no disputing that, but it's to be seen how the team will cope with adding another competition to what they have to deal with.
Yeah, you are right. I think listeners, especially our regular listeners, will realise that was probably the most obvious example of the differences between me and James. James is forever the sensible, level-headed voice of no one and ever. I'm the emotional, excitable, giddy one that goes, we're going to win the European League. So I think that's good to have our ranged balance there, isn't it, James, that we can we can give two-sided opinion of it. So let's move on, James, and let's have a look at Leicester at the weekend, which I'm going to maintain excitement about, is a huge game in terms of the race for Europe. Now, when you look to this fixture, I kind of looked a little bit, especially a few weeks ago, it looked a little bit daunting in that Leicester looked like they were finishing the season relatively strong, but they've had taken the foot off the gas a little bit recently, I think, and they've maybe not performed as well as they like. I'm expecting a tough game at Turf Moor, but maybe not one as tough as perhaps it could have been a couple of weeks ago. But the news coming out of Leicester is very different and very contrasted to that one of Burnley, in that they do want seventh place. They want European football because they've had a taste of it already when they won the league. So I guess, what are your thoughts, James? Do you think it's going to be a tough game, an easy game? Do you think we're going to win it comfortably? Let us have the James Bird preview.
You know, I think the important thing to say to start with is that every game in the Premier League is a tough game. I don't think there's any easy games, even against the likes of Stoke and Southampton, who are down there struggling. Leicester, obviously, they had a bad result at the weekend. I think they're going to want to try and set that right. They'll be very disappointed they got beat by Newcastle at home. And it's obviously put a massive dent in their chances of finishing seventh. They're now 6 points behind us. And Saturday is a massive game, and it could put paid to what they're looking to achieve. I think we'll be as up for it as we are any other game this season. And, you know, hopefully our players have got one eye on potentially chasing down Arsenal. As I said last week, I think all our games really are winnable. But there's a couple of games there for Arsenal to potentially lose. I mean, they've got to play Man United yet, and that's a tough game for them. So hopefully our players are motivated that, if we keep winning games, then, sixth will be within our reach, but it'll be ultimately other teams that will decide it. But we'll have done our bit. So hopefully the players will come out fired up, and I'd expect us to win.
Excellent. I do love this. What do you expect his team selection will be? Do we stick with 4-4-2 and then look to bring Sam on if needed, or do we go 4-5-1 and look to bring Wood on to go 4-4-2? He's suddenly got three formations under his belt as Dutch. I'm not really sure what to do with this.
He still likes to keep his team broadly the same, so I think he'll go with the same starting lineup. Ben Mee back in if he's available, Goodmanson back in if he's available. But other than that, I think he'll be looking to stay 4-4-2, Barnes on Wood, and give him another crack, because for the most part, those two together have been exceptional so far.
Yeah, I think I probably agree with that. I'm expecting a strong performance from the Clarets, and I just think that this team breeds confidence when it wins, and it does feel a little bit different to the end of the last season, in that it feels like we're finishing the season strongly, doesn't it? Whereas last season, I think we got to 40 points and we had quite a disappointing end to the season. We didn't quite perform, or we didn't quite get the number of points that we thought we would have done. So I'm expecting a tough game, but I'm also expecting a Clarets victory. So I am feeling very, very confident. That is all we have time for this week, listeners. We have looked at a fantastic away win at Watford. We have got excited and calming and up and down and rational and irrational about our European chances. And we have looked confidently towards Leicester at the weekend. Thanks as ever to James for joining me. It's been a pleasure as always. But thanks go to you, the listener, for sticking with us again, for downloading and for listening. We say this every week, but your support is much appreciated, and we would not be here without you. I've been Natalie Bromley. This has been the None and Never podcast. Until next time.